Well, hello, 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 everyone. Welcome back to Housewives in Hindsight. I am your host, Megan Pepper. The year is 2020, and we are living in the darkest fucking timeline. Guys, welcome back. It's, what is today? The day after the State of the Union Propaganda Fest? 2 days post Iowa caucus blunder. We're in the midst of the Harvey Weinstein trial, so there's lots of really fucked up shit coming out pertaining to that, and it's about the 110th consecutive gray day here in Rockford, Illinois. So how y'all doing? What a beautiful day it is, right? Did you guys see fucking Rush Limbaugh get a Medal of Honor last night? It truly is the darkest fucking timeline, guys. It's such a dark timeline that I'm legit struggling to even put this shit together this week. I mean, listen, I started this as a hobby, like literally for my fish sesh girls, thinking that five of them would listen and it would be fun and we would joke about it and that's about it. It's turned into a little more than that. Nothing crazy, but my listenership has grown exponentially and I don't know. I'm getting feedback from people who are really down with the whole fish outlook because they're here for housewives, which, listen, I get. I didn't really realize anyone not interested in fish would ever listen to this. So I'm kind of in a mode where I'm like scrambling to figure out what I'm actually doing here because, like I just said, this started as a hobby. I got a microphone, I fucking plugged it in, and I started talking. I did a little bit of editing and I posted it onto a website. It is not a budding career option. It's not something I'm ever gonna charge for that I could see in any logical future instance, and by that I mean like a paywall or a page, like I just don't see that being a thing. But I don't know, the feedback I've gotten from my non-fish people is kind of like, girl, get your shit in order, figure out what you're doing, make an actual timeline, get some structure to this show, and, like, give us good content. And at the end of the day, that's true. Like, if people are going to listen, I want to give them content that's worth listening to. So we're going to talk about, I sound so depressed. I'm so sorry, guys. I'm really not this depressed. I'm just in the middle of like trying to figure it out. And it's a lot, you know, it's a lot when somebody confronts you with like, hey, this thing you put time into like isn't really that great. And you're like, yeah, I know it's not that great because it wasn't like supposed to be. But I, now that you say that, I would love to improve upon it. So I've been trying to figure out a structure. I'm just going to go about it, I think, the classic way today. I'm going to talk about what was going on at the time of this particular episode of Housewives. I'm going to recap this episode of Housewives, and I'm going to give you tidbits of information pertaining to the Housewives in today world and in yesterday world. After that, I don't know. We might have a fully new structure. I might just, I don't know. I'm hoping y'all can give me feedback. Email me, please, 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 at housewivesinhindsight@gmail.com, because I would love to hear any like segments, anything you guys want to hear included, like beyond just questions you have, questions, comments, concerns, like what do you want to hear me cover? Because I'm here to do this for you to listen to and for me to just talk into a microphone and get this shit out to carry on my psychological experiment. So I beg of you, send me your harshest criticisms. I can take it. I promise. I'll pop a Zanny. I'll let Ramona scream in my face that I need to pop a Zanny. I'll pop a Zanny and I'll get over it. It'll be fine. So I'm going to go to break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the way back when of 2008. We'll see you guys then. Welcome back, everyone. We are going to jump into this episode right away with a new segment we call It's All Happening in honor of Miss Sheena Shea, where we look back at what's going on in the world of Bravo as we speak. So what happened this week? Well, Vanderpump Rules. I mean, speaking of Sheena Shea, is that still her name? That's still her name, right? I know she was, I'm baffled by her because she was Sheena Marie, or that's what she went by. And if you would like Google her, you could never find her last name. It's something weird. It's like goulash or something fucking weird. So I guess it makes sense that she took Shea and ran with it. But anyway, it sounds weird to say that. In honor of Miss Sheena Shea, we're going to talk about Vanderpump Rules first and the hot mess that still exists in that show. These fucking dudes. Guys, I'm so confused. The guys like Jax, the Toms, and Bo all got into like old man makeup and costumes. And I'm just like, to what end? Because it didn't seem to have a purpose. And like the makeup they did was like crazy, like movie worthy latex old person makeup. So it must have taken hours and hours and hours. And all they did was like walk into a strip club that all the girls were already at, make themselves really obvious so the girls noticed them. And then they all just like partied together while the dudes were in old man makeup. I'm going to let you sit in there for a minute because I just like, I don't understand. I don't know. Like when they did it for Schwartz's party, they went in drag, which is fucking iconic. I think that that's the bonus episode I have up is us like watching that episode, Mystery Science Theater style. But like they went out to a bar and they had fun and they were like in character. And while they were in character with these old man costumes, there was just like no purpose to it. It was like they sat in hours and hours and hours of makeup just to go be revealed instantly. I get that there's editing, I get all that shit, but it's just, I'm left with many questions. I'm a VPR like stan and I've just been disappointed the last two seasons. I literally turned last night's episode off when there was like 20 minutes left, given I was flipping between that and the State of the Union for some fucking reason. And I don't know, guys. I need a spin-off revolution to happen, I think, with them. I think I've already discussed this, but like I would love to see like an OG spinoff where we follow all the OG cast members, keep Vanderpump Rules as like the people who work for LVP, for the Empress, and like the dogs, and I don't know. I want a Kristen Doty like Hot Mess Express docuseries that follows her like renovating her house and going through the trials and tribulations of relationships. I need these things, and I feel like it would be a benefit to them because this current situation on Vanderpump Rules is
just a little out of hand. It's just a little, it's very, very produced and staged and filtered. And it's just, I just don't get it anymore. And again, like, I'll follow those old OGs and watch them be filtered. If you're giving me the underbelly somewhere else, it's kind of like Teen Mom, which, like, is my, I hate to admit that I watch that stupid show still, but I do. But, like, the Teen Mom 2 and Teen Mom OG are, like, I don't watch those anymore because they're, like, I'll watch an episode every few weeks, maybe, like, two a season just to check in because I need to know. But, like, all those women made money off the show and they all live a very different lifestyle than what the show was portraying at first, which was the struggles of being a teen mother. It didn't involve having money. Like, they were living in trailers struggling to get by. I love Teen Mom Young and Pregnant because it does follow that storyline. And I just think Vanderpump Rules needs to, like, take note and do something similar. It would only be a benefit to them is all I'm saying. Also this week on Bravo, we got the premiere of A Lifetime. Not really, but it was pretty great. Below Deck Sailing Yacht premiered. Below Deck on Diagonal. I think that's what Ben and Ronnie were calling it. And I'm on board with that. On Diagonal board with that. I'm into this show. I love Below Deck. Also, the regular Below Deck had its finale. And I have a lot to fucking say about that. I might save it for post the first episode of the reunion, which, guys, it's getting two reunion episodes, and that's huge. I think Below Deck Med last season didn't even get a reunion, and they've been cheated out of. They've had reunions, but they're always, like, in the clubhouse and just, I don't know. So, what was I just saying? I lost my train of thought. I'm so sorry. Below Deck on Diagonal. Below Deck Sailing Yacht, guys. It's like extreme vacationing. And I'm kind of into it. I'm really bothered by my inability to tell if that Paget guy is 17 or 55. I'm more bothered by his relationship with Sienna? I'm still learning all their names. The redhead. I have a lot of questions that somebody on Reddit pointed out that they've had, like an ungodly amount of redheaded deck crew women, which is great. I love the female representation, but it's interesting that it's always a redhead and they have, like, fair skin and get a little red. I don't know. What's going on there? There's something to that. Like, we're over the, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, 5 out of 5 being redheads is extreme. That's extreme. Anyway, I think I'm going to like the show. I'm really excited that Adam is back. I think we can all agree that Adam is, like, one of the sexiest men that's ever been on Bravo. So seeing him back in the girly gets me excited. What does not get me excited is the fact that they sail and go literally onto a slant and there are, like, knives and shit probably flying around that galley. Again, it's extreme vacationing. It doesn't seem that relaxing. And I'm fascinated by it. I'm really interested in seeing what types of people go on these trips. And yeah, I'm here for it. I also noticed that every single crew member looks like a Bizarro World version of somebody else on Bravo. I'm going to make a list maybe for y'all. Because Or not on Bravo. Not that they are a bizarro version of someone on Bravo. They're a bizarro version of like someone else in reality TV. The first, not the chief stew, but the first stew or second stew, whatever it is. She looked like Amber from Teen Mom, but like skinny and blonde. There was a deck crew guy that literally looked like all of the guys from Summer House, like, had a baby and birthed it. The fucking captain looks like Harvey Levinstein or Levine or whatever his name is from TMZ. I'm not convinced it's not him. So, I don't know. Bizarro World Below Deck. Let's get into it, guys. Speaking of Summer House, though, too, that premieres its fourth season tonight. And I held off on watching that show for so long. I did so well. And then my friend fucking Amy, like, convinced me to watch it. And I binged it. And now I'm actually really fucking excited. I want to know what's going on with Lindsay and Carl. Like, you can only hold off for so long. There's even things I held off on, I didn't watch in their time. And then I went back and I'm like, what was I thinking? Like, Ladies of London is a good example of that. I only watched that last year. And I'm like, guys, I was missing out on so fucking much. That might be my bonus episode material, because it's like gone but not forgotten. I love those fucking one-off, two-off, three-off Bravo shows. They're so good. Also, guys, Ben Cohen turned one this year. Or not this year. Ben Cohen turned one yesterday. So Andy's little angel baby arrived Earthside a year ago yesterday. He's the cutest. I have, you know, I think Andy is half my spirit animal and half someone I find really problematic, but that fucking kid is too cute, and I'm happy that he got to fulfill that life dream of being a father. Good for you, Andy Cohen. Get it, guy. Get it. Can you believe it? I can't. Never mind. That was me trying to do that Paul Rudd thing when he's never mind. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. All right. So now that we've covered what's going on at Bravo in 2020, first week of February, we're going to hop in the Wayback Machine and head back to 2008 when the minimum wage was $6.55 an hour and gas somehow cost $3.32 a gallon. It's like half an hour of work to put a gallon of gas in your car if you made minimum wage, which is no wonder our fucking economy collapsed just months later. All right, guys, we're in the Wayback Machine. We're back in 2008, and here's what was going on. Fun fact, there was a worldwide hop shortage, and Sam Adams sold small craft breweries the hops from their back stock at cost, and has since given over $3 million in loans to small breweries to spark competition. And I think that's the American fucking way, and maybe they deserve a Medal of Freedom for keeping beer going when we needed it most. Fuck you, Rush Limbaugh, again. I'm on a tirade, and I will not be done until that medal is taken from that man. Sorry if you agree with that, but, or if you agree with anything he says as a racist, misogynist dickhole, but you can tune out right now. This is not the show for you if you don't like that kind of talk. Sorry. The price of a movie was $7. So if you made a minimum wage, it cost more than an hour worth of your time to go to a fucking movie. I don't know how much it is now. I don't go to the movies much anymore, but I'm pretty sure it's like 15. This is kind of crazy. I mean, we're talking about exponential growth in 2008. So we're talking about something. We're talking about 12 years ago when our New York Housewives first hit the scene. And like, shit was just a lot different, guys. The world population was 6.7 billion, which is a lot. But for reference, it's now 7.5 billion. I don't know if anybody's ever talked to you about what the difference between a million and a billion is, but let's go over it real quick because it shocked my brain the first time I heard it. A million seconds, if you put it in context, is about 2 weeks worth of time. A billion seconds is 35 years. So that's the difference between a million and a billion. So when we're talking about bailouts in the trillions, when we're talking about world populations expanding by a billion, it's a fucking lot. It's more than you can fathom. 2008, the Giants won the Super Bowl, which the Kansas City Chiefs just won the Super Bowl on Sunday, which is super exciting for them because I don't think they had won one ever. I don't know. I'm not big in the sports. I kept yelling, go red team, because they were all the same colors. But guys, which by the way, back to 2020 for a minute, there was a commercial with Teresa and fucking Caroline Manzo and they flipped a table and I was so excited for that commercial to happen. And then I turned away for 2 fucking seconds and I missed it. That was my Super Bowl and I missed it. Anyway, in 2008, back in the Wayback Machine, the Giants won the Super Bowl and the cost of an ad at the time during that Super Bowl was $2.7 million. Last Sunday, the 49ers versus the Chiefs, the Super Bowl ads were $6.7 million. That is crazy. The exponential growth that has happened since 2008 is fucking insane. Fun little tidbit, too, that Prince covered Radiohead's Creep at Coachella that year. And I don't know. R.I.P. I love Prince and everything he does. And I also love Radiohead. So, guys, I'm going to leave you with this because it's the best. The world also got its first ever Rickroll when YouTube redirected all of its featured front page videos to Rick Astley's Never Gonna Give You Up, Never Gonna Let You Down, Never Gonna Run Around and Desert You. I leave you with that and we'll be back to recap episode 5, Real Housewives of New York. All right, guys, let's get into the actual recap. We are talking about Real Housewives of New York, episode 5 today. It premiered April 1st. Oh my God, 2008. Guys, the Rickroll happened the day this premiered. Oh my God, I love that. Anyway, the wiki description of this episode is Bethany meets Alex to teach her healthy cooking techniques. The Van Campens prepare for a big night out. Ramona gets Avery and her friends ready for a school dance. That's pretty accurate. That's pretty much what happens. This episode felt kind of like filler to me. I should mention that the title of this episode is Careful, She Bites. And I like that title because I feel like they're already like into it. They're already getting cheeky with the titles because it's not only referring to Miss Ginger, it's referring to Bethany too. This episode is like a mix of like little family moments and Bethany wasted or like on the edge and about to dive off. It's kind of a filler episode with all the family shit, but the Bethany shit is like bringing the drums. And it's interesting to watch her now in hindsight and see how she was so performative for the cameras, how she was sure to like bring the cameras into any uncomfortable space or situation where there normally wouldn't be a camera. and that the addition of a camera like really intensifies the situation. We really like start to see the seeds of that being planted here, and her being pretty calculated about what she does and doesn't show. And I mean, just in true form, like her perfect ability to like give everyone who watches her a love boner and a hate boner all at the same time. I love her so much, and I fucking can't stand her all at the same time. And she shows so many narcissistic tendencies that it's just kind of, I don't know, it's like a fucking whirlwind of shit that you experience in every fucking episode. So anyway, we get this like perfect juxtaposition of these like family friendly moments mixed with Bethany's chaos. All of this is starting with Bethany meeting Alex at a farmer's market. They're meeting up so that Bethany is going to give Alex advice on how to feed the boys in a healthy way. She's a natural food chef. By the way, guys, I learned when I was she's 37 as they're filming this, and she was in the midst of like creating Bethany Bakes, if you remember. And she was also running a food subscription company at the time, which I think is really fascinating, because I feel like those kinds of things didn't really take off until probably like 4 years ago. So the fact that she was doing it like 12 years ago, I think it was just in New York, and maybe it existed in New York all that time ago, and that's where the concept kind of filtered out from. But I don't know. I wonder what happened to that. I wonder what happened to Bethany Bakes. Did she just give up? I'm assuming she just went to the wayside when she got into the booze business. Anyway, sorry. Wrangle it back in. We meet up, and Bethany is kind of like distressed, and she's just kind of frantically talking with Alex, like, so the boys want to eat, or you want to feed them healthy. If you want to look at this, it'll be easy to cook this. And she just seems a little frantic. And Alex is like, are you good? Like, what's going on? And she's like, I think I just broke up with Jason, like just now. And she reveals that like 2 seconds before Alex got there, she was walking around the farmer's market on the phone with Jason. They were talking about like the whole situation and like her kind of bottom line when it comes to whether or not they'll have kids. And he said he has 3 kids already and he doesn't see himself having one in the next year. And to her, that's important. We know now it was 2 years before Bethany would be pregnant with Bryn, but I mean, I get it. She's 37 in this scene and she's frantic. She's like, I want a kid. And if this guy's just going to drag me along and not even consider that as an option for us, like, I just have to get off the pot. Not even shit. I have to get off the pot. I don't know. He's on a timeline that doesn't fucking fit hers. And, you know, we know now that they didn't end up together, and she never had, she didn't have her baby with him. She had it with Jason 2.0, who is a psychotic piece of garbage. And I wish she had it with 1.0, but here we are. You can't turn back time. I mean, she told us if we could, if we could find a way, I'd take back all those things that hurt you. And you'd say, anyway, we cut over to Ramona, and she's taking Avery and her friends to get their hair done. They're going to their first school dance. She says that it's an all-girls school, but it was unclear if it's an all-girls dance or if they, like, have a boy-girl dance. I mean, in modern times, we've heard, maybe even back then, we've heard Ramona say that she sends Avery to an all-girls private school because she thinks it gives them more confidence. And I probably agree with that. I did not go to an all-girls private school, but I think that if there's studies done on that, and I don't know, I agree, because you don't, yeah, girls can be catty, but they also uplift you, and you're not ever worried about, like, what you look like to boys, so that, like, insecure thing that triggers inside of you at a young age just isn't there if you're only surrounded by girls, so... Anyway, they go out, they get, like, blowouts, and we meet Avery's little friend, Becky, who's, like, the cutest little New Yorker girl I've ever seen. She's, like, super blunt and forward and just has a cute little accent. She's like, no, no, like, my mother would be like this. And she shows them how she thinks her mother would dance if she was chaperoning the dance, like Ramona. Little Becky is clearly not bothered by Ramona, but Avery is super bothered by her mother, and I think they both get a little enjoyment out of it. I think Ramona gets a little enjoyment embarrassing Avery, and I think Avery gets a little enjoyment being embarrassed by Ramona, because Ramona is kind of a cool mom. So, and I think she knows that, and she wants to give her credit where credit is due without crediting her whatsoever. We hop over to Jill's, and we get to know Jill and Ginger and their relationship. Jill is, like, training a new housekeeper, and she's worried because Ginger is not nice to her and bites her and barks at her. And I just, there's really not much, I mean, really, this whole scene is just showing you, like, how awful Ginger is. And I'm just left with a lot of questions with these women and their fucking dogs that are like Ginger. Ginger looks like a rat. She's aggressive. She bites Allie. She bites friends of Jill's. She bites the housekeeper. She's not fucking snuggly. And Jill refers to, like, the appeal of having a dog is having it sleep in bed with you. But, like, this monstrosity of a creature is not, like, a little snuggle creature. It is a little rat dog. And it's a fucking bitch. That's all I have to say about it. I'm very annoyed by Ginger. Her little beady fucking eyes? What the fuck is appealing about this dog? Someone explain to me what it is about a Chihuahua that's appealing. They are terrified of everything. They're aggressive as fuck. And they're not even cute. I just don't get it. Anyway, Jill decides in this moment that she needs a dog trainer. So she's setting up, like, a kind of play date or whatever. Not play date. She's setting up a trainer with Lou so that Lou can get Aston potty trained for in the house. And she can kind of talk about what's going on with Ginger and why she's so aggressive. We cut back over to Ramona with the girls, and they're out for tea, and they're, oh god, it's really cute. I want to be, like, snarky about this scene, but it is cute. They go to this place called Alice's Teacup. All the girls with their fresh blowouts are wearing wings, like little fairy wings, and they're talking about, like, relationships and boys with Ramona. She's like, it's not that weird. These girls are, like, 13 going on 14. She's talking about, like, the boy and girl dynamic and how, like, boys are actually more nervous of you than you are of them. And the girls are like, no, they're not. There's no way. And she's like, no, that's true. And, like, until I learned that, I didn't know anything. And that's when I finally realized that. That's when I got my confidence and found my husband. Now, given it's a little weird that we're, like, talking to 13-year-old girls about how to find husbands, but this is the world we live in. We condition little girls into thinking that that's what they need. But Ramona, luckily, like, counterbalances that by pounding into Avery's head that she can't depend on a man. Like, she can find a man for the fun part of life, but when it comes to, like, finances and
being your own woman. Like, you got to do that shit for you, girl. And I think Ramona, in that sense, is a good person to bring these girls out to tea and talk to them about that. They do go back to Ramona's house to get ready, and they get, I mean, I don't, they just end up in like jeans and shirts. I don't think it was like a formal dance, I guess, just a casual dance with a bunch of little girls, and they're all showing Ramona how to dance, and I don't know, it's cute. It's like watching kids show you how to do those fucking weird dances today. Ramona's just standing there like, I don't understand any of this. But it's kind of like the equivalent of today's TikTok youths, I guess. God, this episode is boring because this episode is kind of boring. We'll improve, guys. I swear. I promise. We're going to improve upon this as we go. More and more. We have plenty of time. We cut back over to Bethany meeting up with Lauren, who's the lady she was having, like, drinks with in the episode before. When she gets sloshed and talks to Jason about moving in together. She's meeting up with her to talk about the breakup. She mentions in this, like, as Lauren's walking up, that Lauren's been a good friend since the beginning of their relationship. And I think I was, like, realizing watching this in the moment that I don't think Bethany knew this woman before Jason. And I have zero evidence of this, or I don't know. But I've theorized that this Lauren woman is probably a wife of one of Jason's friends. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Maybe the following seasons prove me wrong. Like, maybe she sticks around. I can't, for the life of me, remember if she comes up again. If any of y'all know, like, shoot a bitch a forewarning. I'd love to know. I don't know. I haven't gotten to that point yet, and she's certainly not, like, a Joni or anyone who I would remember. They are, guy. Oh, also, well, no, I need to add to that, that this had me wondering, so I did take to Bethany's Instagram, and I scoured that bitch for a while, and you would be, it is hard to find a picture of her with a single friend that's not one of the housewives, or her boyfriend, or an employee, which, I'm not going to judge. Maybe she just doesn't put her personal life out there like that. Bitch took a fucking pregnancy test on camera. But maybe she just doesn't put her personal life out there like that. Yeah, no, she does. I mean, I guess later in this episode, she meets up with an old friend of hers. And she says that they've known each other forever and that she has maybe 5 people in her life that are there and that have been there forever. And I think that's kind of how Bethany rolls. It's like, when you get famous or you get wealthy, like, you stick with those people that you've known forever and that knew you before all of that, and everybody else can go fuck themselves. And I think she really holds on to that, and that's, you know, healthy probably, but it makes her very contentious with other people, and I do think it makes her maybe aggressive with other people because she knows that they hold no, like, true value in her life, right? Anyway, this is also a moment where you, like, realize that Bethany knows exactly how to play the reality TV game. Like, she called these people to have this talk with Lauren on film in front of the cameras and to get in front of it and be like, we broke up and here's the facts. This is why we broke up. This is why we are where we are. Given they were already filming, I think, because Alex and Simon, well, actually Simon calls her to invite her to the surprise party he's throwing for Alex. So I'm sure that they had, like, a call sheet to meet up at that moment to have that conversation filmed, and Bethany threw this Lauren situation into the mix because she wanted, again, to get it all on camera.
I don't know. Bethany puts everything on camera. And Jason 1.0 seems to me, from the very little bit we get of him, that he's shy, that he's not into being the center of attention, especially having cameras on him, and that he was doing this for her. And as I think I mentioned in a previous episode, that he was doing it to get his parents' charity that is in honor of his sister out into the world. We'll get into that again in a little bit. But so Simon calls, invites Bethany to Alex's birthday party. Since she's standing there with Lauren, she kind of invites her along, which, I mean, is fair enough. She's going, like, about to get on a boat with a bunch of people she doesn't know. So I would want, like, a safety net there, too. I don't know. So I'm like, lost in this because I'm thinking about how much I wish that the friendship between Alex and Bethany had lasted, because they were so cute together. I feel like, I mean, I know she shows up in, like, Bethany Ever After. I just get that gist that Alex is, like, as crazy as she is and as weird as they are in their relationship, on a friendship level, she's, like, a really good, empathetic, sympathetic person. And I liked their friendship. And maybe they do still hang out. Maybe, again, that's part of Bethany's private world that we know nothing about. But I'm going to doubt it. So we go from there and we cut back over to Lou's house. And it's kind of like a little vignette look into, like, her family life. I mean, aside from Bethany, this episode, like I said, is really, like, delving into, like, the women and how they are with their children, how they are as mothers, how they are as the women of their homes. And this is kind of our peek into Lou's world. It starts off with Noelle getting breakdance lessons, and Lou, I mean, there's not a lot to say about it. It's a little kid getting dance lessons, whatever. Lou's a little out of touch. Like, the breakdance guy comes in and he's like, "Hi, I'm Cyclone," or whatever. And she's like, "Oh, Cyclone." And he's like, "Yeah, yeah, rad." Or totally. And she's like, "Oh, yeah, yeah, totally, totally." She's so fucking, like, not cool. We cut from there to, like, a little family dinner. It's family and friends. Victoria's little boy friend, guy friend, is over. It's dinner time at the De La Supp's house. Alex has a male friend over. They're talking about, like, Napoleon in the living room while Rosie makes dinner. There's a discussion at the dinner table about Victoria and where she's going to go to boarding school. They're eating, like, halved avocados, by the way. I think she said Rosie was making red snapper, but the appetizer seemed odd. It was just halved avocados, like, still in their peel. I don't know if there was, like, seasoning. It just seemed like a weird-ass appetizer, but maybe that's, like, a European thing. Anyway, so they're talking about where Victoria is going to go to boarding school, and Noelle chimes in and says that he thinks that all girls that go to all-girls schools come out as lesbians. And, of course, everybody has a little chuckle about the precarious little kid, whatever, saying silly things at the dinner table. But I kind of liked Alex chimed in. And I shouldn't say I kind of liked, because I'm grappling with my feelings about what was actually going on here. But Alex chimes in, Alex, like, the Count Alex, and he says that he went to an all-boys Catholic school and he didn't turn out gay. So, like, your assessment of what happens in this situation is off. And at first I was like, fuck yeah, Alex, like, be an ally. But then I kind of reverted back and I'm like, I don't know if he's, like, not homophobic, though. I think he's, I mean, we've been exposed to the fact that he's anti-Semitic. That, I mean, it's like season 4 or 5 where Lou says that he would have a heart attack to know that Luann's dating a Jew. Guys. But I am here for this discussion because he is saying, like, you don't just turn gay just because you're surrounded by the same sex or gender doesn't mean you just become gay. That's not how it works. But he didn't really say it in those terms. So my question I'm left with is Alex saying this as a lesson to his son to say you don't just turn gay? Or is he saying it to be like, hey, don't say that kind of shit, because you implying that her going to an all-girls school makes her a lesbian implies that me going to an all-boys school has made me gay, and I am not going to live in a life where that's the perception. So that's the question that I'm left with, and it's a fat TBD on whether or not he's an ally or not into being mistakenly called gay. I don't know. There is some funny, like, not funny even. It's like weird background chatter in this scene. At one point, like right after the lesbian comment or the talk, they're back on the boarding school subject, and Alex says to Victoria, like, for all you know, I might send you to Thailand next year, which, TBD on what the fuck that means. I don't know. Is he like selling? I don't know. I want to say selling her off into, like, is that what he's implying? That might be wrong on my end, but like, what are you talking about? I don't think he was saying I might send you to boarding school in Thailand. He was like, I might just ship you the fuck off to Thailand. Yikes. And then you hear Noelle in the background, like, shave her head and make her a Buddhist, while Lou is reprimanding her and saying, elbows off the table. So anyway, that's dinner at the De La Sepp's house. I mean, who doesn't want in on that? We are entertained with an after dinner moment of entertainment by Noel doing his breakdance routine for the family. And it's back to a whole lot of wholesome family fun in the De La Sepp's house, am I right? From there, we cut over to Alex and Simon as she's getting ready for her birthday surprise. She has no idea what's going on. She's like, I don't know how to dress because I don't know where we're going. Is this more formal? Should I wear pants? What kind of jewelry should I wear? What's the shoe situation? And Simon is like kind of guiding her through it, but it's like, just tell her what to wear. Just give her, like, pick out an outfit. You guys are so crazy together anyway. Pick out an outfit. Tell her to wear it. I'm sure she'll throw it on and it'll work anyway. So he gets her in the car and he literally blindfolds her in the back seat, which I have a huge problem with this because it's not like tinted windows. So were people driving by seeing a man driving somewhere with a woman blindfolded in the back seat? How does that work? If I saw that, I might call the police. I might be wrong in doing that because maybe it's an Alex and Simon moment, but I might call the police. And maybe we live in a different time now. Maybe in 2008, people were like, yeah, whatever. Bitch in a back seat with a blindfold on. Get a girl. But in today's day and age, hell to the no. That bitch looks like she's getting sent to Thailand. Anyway, so we end up where we're at. Surprise! It's a fucking boat party with a bunch of people that Alex seems to not recognize whatsoever. She takes her blindfold off and she's looking around, scanning this room like, like looking for a single face of someone she knows. TBD on this too, guys. Like, I don't know if he just hired people to be there. Anyway, Bethany is there. She's with Lauren. She's about 4 golden tequilas on the rocks deep. And wasted. Like, the Bethany wasted tour continues. She's literally the Greek chorus to the party. She's just like shouting shit in the background. She's talking to this French guy. She's clearly like teetering. She's a little on just, I don't know. She's wallowing through drinking through this breakup. So Alex and Simon pull her aside to talk, and there's a little talking head moment with her where she's like, I feel like I'm like getting pulled aside by my parents to like have a harsh talking to, which is exactly what it felt like. She's like super adamant. Simon says something about, he mentions her confiding in Alex when they were at the farmer's market. And what she said, kind of revealing like, hey, just so you know, I'm aware of the situation as we're going into this discussion. And Bethany gets a little defensive about it. And she's like, you know, I think I just see Alex as someone who is disarming. And Simon's like, disarming. And Bethany gets crazy defensive, and she's like, yeah, disarming, I'm not changing my stance on that. And it's like, girl, I think he was just trying to understand you. I don't know. But she's very like stubborn about the situation and just doesn't want him like impeding over or talking over what I guess point she's trying to make. I think she's clearly like really put off by Simon in this moment. And again, I don't know about like the actual consistency of filming. I don't know. It's like, to me, I'm like, it's possible that the episode we get next week happened before this. So maybe, because other than that, she's only had like one interaction with Simon. So the way she's responding to him in this moment just seems a little like intense to me, considering the fact that they hardly know each other. Anyway, so they start talking to her about her whole situation, and in true Bethany fashion, in her talking head, she's like saying she doesn't want to talk about her relationship with these people. But then it's like cutting between her saying that and scenes of her just like, so we were doing this and blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm in it, and he's like out there, and I'm in here, and we're like swimming in this ocean, and it's like, I'm like spinning, and then he's like over there and he's spinning too. And like, she's just like, we're the fuck vomiting all over these two while talking head Bethany is like, I really just don't want to talk to them about my relationship. It's like, I don't want to talk to them about it. Anyway, so she goes on also to say like that some, I don't know, it's an iconic moment of her saying, and some man said like, well, she's a Mustang, you have to let her run. And Simon's like, no, darling, you're a Ferrari. Bethany does not like that. She's like, I guess thanks for giving me a really nice car, but like, I was talking about literal horses. Anyway, so everyone leaves the boat, and Alex and Simon have like a private dinner situation on board. They're super performative in front of the cameras. It's all like, he like gets on one knee and he's like, you're so beautiful, and like cheerses her. And this also left me in a moment, because I remember in a previous episode I did of New York, I was saying that Alex was wearing a pair of earrings that I know for a fact Simon gets her for her birthday. So I was thinking it was going to be in this scene. Like, we saw these earrings earlier in the season, and I'm thinking it was just again, like a continuancy thing where just scenes were a little out of order. So I was just convinced that that was going to be the scene where he gives her these earrings, but it wasn't. And I have a lot of questions about this now, because I am now convinced, and I will never have a way to prove this, but I'm convinced that he didn't really buy those earrings for her birthday. I think he took earrings she had and performed on camera like he was buying them anew. And I think it's not until the next season that she even gets those earrings on camera. So if anybody knows the jeweler of where she got the earrings, I need answers. Anyway, we cut back over to Bethany's apartment. She's packing to leave for Miami, and holy shit, she has the monogrammed bag that she gives everybody in Scary Island. I died. I screamed out loud. That bag is an icon on this show. I mean, it's like another one of the housewives in its own right, right? Anyway, Jill comes over and she's just kind of questioning Bethany about like what her motive is in this breakup. What are you looking for? Why did you break up? What are you going to get out of this? And I mean, side note, Jill walks into her apartment and takes a giant whiff of the air. And it left me wondering. I couldn't help but wonder, is it because Bethany was cooking something? Or because cookie shit on the floor? Like, does Bethany's apartment smell bad or does it smell delicious? These are the questions, guys. Anyway, so now Bethany is word vomiting all over Jill. And again, Jill is asking her these like very logical, rational questions. Are you really ready to be with a man who already has 3 kids and is not ready in this moment to give you the kid that you so very deeply want? And Bethany's like, I don't know. Like, why is she asking me? And then she does say, which, by the way, there's a little moment in this conversation between them. B says for the first time in her life, she's committed. But she was married before this moment. She was married to a guy named Peter Sussman. They were married from 96 to 97. Given, sure, maybe they weren't committed to each other. But I imagine if you married somebody, at some point you felt like you were committed. Anyway, it's not the first time Bethany has fudged the truth. We get like the best, well, it's not the best, but it's a pretty great iconic Bethany impression of Jill, where she's like Jill is like, well, if you're in this and you're committed, and she's again asking her rational questions, like, if you're committed, why are you staying? Why are you packing your suitcase and leaving to go to Miami and like running away from the problem that's here? And this is the scene where we get Bethany. That she's like, you're packing your bag and you're running. Why are you running? You're packing your bag and you're running in Miami. You're running. If you say you're not running, but then you're going to run, you're going to run to Miami. Why are you running? You're packing your bag and you go. That's my impression of Bethany impersonating Jill. I hope you all really enjoyed it. So anyway, Bethany leaves. She heads to Miami. They just walk out the door. It's whatever. We're back at Ramona's condo, and she's kind of discussing like career options with Avery. Business maven, queen icon legend Ramona is discussing. Yes, I stole that from Danny Pellegrino. She's discussing the future of Romario's business. It's a faith-based jewelry line and trophies. She says that she implemented an online shop so that it was available to online customers. Business maven. They're trying to get Avery to go shadow Romario for the day, and she's just kind of like not that into it. And I mean, in the moment, I'm like, same, Avery. Same. We cut over to Bethany in Miami. She's like checking into a hotel, and she's explaining that her friend is like the owner of a restaurant there, and he got all the accommodations set up for her and comped. And like, she walks into this, I mean, it's a pretty basic hotel room, and she's like crazy excited about the accommodations there. And it's just, in hindsight, it's fucking kind of cute to watch Bethany get so excited over like a balcony and some lounge chairs. It's like, it's literally a nothing like even close to what she gets today, but her excitement over that little moment is like, it was wholesome, guys. It was wholesome and heartwarming. We meet her friend Sarah. They discussed that they've known each other for 23 years. Bethany's like, I'm disgusted. I cannot believe it. I want to vomit. That makes me crazy. And this is the point where Bethany says that she has maybe five people in her life that she's close to. And I think that that's pretty much remained the same to today. They talk about the Jason situation and the fact that Bethany wants a kid and like she's not sure if she can wait on Jason. Like she doesn't think it's going to fit in her timeline being 37. And like if he wants to wait 2 years, is she going to be able to do it in 2 years? And her friend Sarah is kind of like, you know, as women, we are born with all of our eggs, so they age with you. And like if it were me, I would rather make my baby with the younger, fresher egg than the older ones that are about to get rotten. And guys, I had like a panic attack. I've seen this a million times, but I am almost the age that Bethany was while she was filming this, and I don't have a kid, and it is like, it's like panic mode. I'm not panicked yet, but I am a little panicked because I don't know where I stand on it. Again, we're in the darkest of timelines. I don't want to bring a kid into that. It freaks me out, but I do want a kid. So this is where you left us, Trump and Rush Limbaugh. Medal of Freedom. Medal of Freedom. Freedom to do whatever the fuck you want, I guess. Including be a misogynistic, racist dickhole. Anyway, Bethany wraps this whole conversation up by saying, like, she just wants to be happy. And she says she could have had a baby with Larry or Jimmy or Kenvin or Peter, but she didn't because she wants to do it with the right person. And aside from the fact of just knowing she didn't, are these real people? I want to know if these are real guys she dated. She didn't mention Sussman, whatever his name is. I already forgot his first name. But anyway, who the fuck cares? Tell me to move on. Shout it at me. Move on, Megan. We're back over. God, there's so many like cut back and forth scenes in the show. I like graph this out with just the scenes. And yeah, there's like 12 different scenes in an hour long in a 45 minute episode. Anyway, we're over to Avery. She is going to work with Romario. Ramona's kind of like interrogating her before they go about what she wants to do with her future. She's talking about how her mom died 2 years ago and like really drilled it into her that she needs to be financially set. We've discussed this a million times already. Ramona is a business maven and she's very adamant that Avery learned that she cannot depend on the money of a man to set her up in her life. So she's talking to Avery about what she wants to do in her future, and it's just funny and cute because Avery's like super childlike in her responses because she's like, first I wanted to be a singer, then I wanted to be an actress, then I wanted to be a dancer, then I wanted to be a triple threat. And Ramona's like, what's a triple threat? She's like, singer, dancer, and actress. That is such a 13-year-old girl response. But she's also like drinking black coffee and like discussing her financial future. She's like an old, old, old soul in a very new world. She like quantum leaped into this world, I think. I don't think she's of this time and age, but here she is, and Ramona's somehow her guardian. From there, we cut over to Luann's townhouse for the dog training. It's pretty clear, like, from the beginning that Jill has zero interest in anything this guy has to teach her. She doesn't want any of his fucking advice. He's like, listen, we know, like, she wants someone to be like, you're doing great. You're doing great, honey. Like, you love Ginger, and that's all that matters. But the reality is that, like, she's aggressive, and he's teaching her how to make the dog understand what her place is in the pack. And Jill's just like, but I like to sleep with her. And just, she's not giving in. So it doesn't really matter. Lou is actually really like rational in this moment, because she's saying like the guy is like, don't feed the dog human food. I know that you think she likes fancy food, but like, she's obese and we need to fix this. And she's like, well, Jill is like, well, she doesn't like dog food. And Luann's like, well, like, when she gets hungry, she'll eat. If that's all she has available to her at some point, she's going to eat it. And it's true. They go over this with the bed thing, too, because Jill's like, well, I like her in my bed. And Luann's like, well, yeah, but it's like kids. Like, if you let a kid co-sleep in your bed for so long, they're always going to want to sleep that way, which, that's a decision made by parents, whatever. But like, yeah, at some point you have to like cut the cord and make it not a thing anymore. And that's how you circumvent behavior, right? Anyway, I don't understand anything about this argument, because I like to sleep with my kitty cats, but that dog is a fucking rat, and there is nothing appealing to me about sleeping in bed with a little rat dog. So, anyway, we go back over to Romario's office, and Avery is there, and they are branding the shit out of this, guys. They're like, true faith jewelry, true faith jewelry, true faith jewelry. We learn that Romario's company makes both trophies and like medals and like faith-based jewelry. And I had a theory that maybe it was his company that made the Medal of Freedom that went around Rush Limbaugh's neck last night. I can't sit with that information for too long. Anyway, Avery gets to like sit and conceptualize the design of the jewelry that they are going to release. And I'm a little confused about how this is not exciting for her. Because if I was going to, like, take your daughter to work day or whatever with my dad, and he worked somewhere where I got to conceptualize and design jewelry, I would want to go every day. And I would totally want to take over the business. I get that that's me. But Avery seems like she's into that. But into fashion. Like, she likes to tell Ramona how to dress and what to wear and all that, but she is not fucking into the idea of taking over this company. So anyway, she's super polite but super uninterested. And that's where that's left. She works in finance now. Oddly enough, Ramona convinced her to go into finance, I'm sure. Side note though, Romario was giving me hard JFK Jr. vibes in this scene, and like, no offense, Carol, no, you can't party with us, Sonia, but like, if anyone was actually jamming out with JFK Jr., well, it looks like it was Ramona. Well, at least his bizarro world version. We're back over to Jill's condo department. I don't know what you call it. It's after the dog training. Allie walks through the house and she's just kind of like, you've put no effort into fixing this situation. Like, the stairs are still by the bed for the dog to get in. You're still feeding her shit. She's fatter than she was earlier. But whatever. Life goes on. Ginger's still a fucking bitch. Jill is wearing her dirty shoes on the bed, and it really bothered me. And I don't know, we're left in that scene with a with the talking out of Allie saying she wishes Ginger would die. And I just have to say, congrats, Allie, your dream came true. Ginger's dead. That's sad but true. We have one final scene with Bethany. It's super quick. It's pretty much just like a body titty scene with Bethany where she's contemplating life, and she's thinking, I think I'm gonna get back with Jason. And I read, by the way, unconfirmed, it was a Reddit post, but I read that Jason 1.0 got fired from his job for appearing on this show, and it made me wonder if that's the point of contention. going on between them. Maybe he's having his harsh realization of like what it means to date this woman, because she clearly has this passion for business, but also this need to expose her every waking moment, and he just can't live like that. So that's where we're left, guys. We're left with her literally saying, I'm going to come back to New York and we're going to try to work this out. We'll see what happens next week. Next week on, we do get our first Housewives of New York dinner party with the ladies and Simon. So I'm sure you all remember that episode. I want to thank you all for tuning in. This has been Housewives in Hindsight with your host, Megan Pepper. I'm unsure as I go through this kind of transitional phase of trying to figure out the best structure for this pod. TBD on whether I'm going to get one out next week. If I don't, I will for sure get one out the following week. I'm hoping I can get my shit together in time to bring you something worthwhile and of quality next week. But we will see. Thanks again, guys, for tuning in. And we will catch ya on the flippity flip.